What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is playwright James Sherman, author of Beau Jest and many other Jewish-themed plays. We'll also have visits from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert, plus a special visit from Rabbi Baruch Kohan. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom! While the Jewish holiday season finally concluded last Thursday and Friday with Simchat Torah, this week still feels quite celebratory, but for an odd and important reason. Gilad Shalit, the young Israeli soldier held for 5 years by Hamas terrorists in Gaza, was finally released and went home last week. In a stunning prisoner exchange of 1,027 Palestinian terrorists, many of them convicted murderers, for one 24-year-old Israeli tag sergeant, Gilad Shalit was free to go home to Israel as he did last Tuesday. He had been held captive since 2006 when he was captured in a cross-border raid by Hamas terrorists. While several times in its history, Israel has exchanged as many as 1,000 Arab prisoners for one Israeli captive soldier, and even hundreds of prisoners for the remains of an Israeli soldier, there's still an extraordinary quality to this deal that is astonishing. What can we say about a country that values a single human life and the loyalty due to a captured son above all other concerns? There is, of course, a likelihood that at the very least, some of the Palestinian terrorists released from Israeli jails will return to their lives of terror and will ultimately kill more Israelis. But the Jewish principle of pidyon shvuyim, the redemption of captives, is an ultimate moral principle. It has never been demonstrated more highly than this past week. The sight of Israelis rejoicing and welcoming home a young man captured from his tank in a border raid when he was just 19 years old was amazing to those who never thought they would see this day. Shalit's safe return was the fulfillment of a biblical and Talmudic imperative. As we say, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehechiyanu v'kiyemanu v'higiyanu lazman hazeh. Blessed are you, God, ruler of the universe, who gives us life, sustains us, and brings us to this amazing occasion. I brought your boy home, Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu told Shalit's parents while he waited with them at an airbase. Our son has been reborn, his father Noam said outside their home in a village in the hills in the north of Israel near the Lebanese border. He told well-wishers Shalit had some health problems due to the lack of sunlight and the lack of care for shrapnel wounds probably sustained when he was snatched in a border raid in which his comrades died. Gilad Shalit, his breathing labored, told Egyptian television in an interview, "I missed my family very much." He acknowledged that it was nerve-wracking to be whisked from his lonely seclusion and put into the glare of international media attention. Well, beyond the extraordinary joy of seeing Gilad Shalit released and the Thanksgiving quality of his Sukkot time redemption, there is a sobering note to all this. The prisoners released to get Shalit out included those who orchestrated suicide attacks on, in order, a Jerusalem pizzeria, Sabaro, that killed 15 Israelis, the Pesach Seder terrorists in Netanya who killed 30 Jews, those who coordinated a bus bombing in Jerusalem that killed 11 Israelis, and a bus bombing in Haifa as well that killed 17. The remaining 550 prisoners have not yet been named, but they're set to be released in about 2 months. Clearly, the Israeli leaders and officials who approved this exchange were willing to pay a very, very high price to maintain Israel's sense of solidarity and community. They want Israeli parents to feel that the government will do everything it can to save their captured sons or daughters. And Israeli soldiers are presumably more ready to go into battle knowing that. There was an intense debate behind closed doors within the Israeli government. Past prisoner releases have demonstrated that the exchange will almost surely prove in the long run to be a very costly choice. In the past 30 years, according to one estimate, Israel has released about 7,000 Arab prisoners in exchange for 16 Israelis and the bodies of 10 more. Another estimate puts the number of Arab prisoners exchanged since 1985 at about 10,000. According to a report in 2007 by an Israeli terrorism victims group, 177 Israelis were murdered in the 5 years before that study by recidivist terrorists who had been freed in exchanges. That makes the likelihood of some of these 1,027 terrorists going right back to killing innocent men, women, and children very high. The long-term danger of this deal should be clear. But there is something intrinsically Israeli about making this decision, an element that speaks to the deeply held values of Israeli society, and it is incredibly admirable and moral. In the face of a terrible choice, the Israeli government chose to free a son. Every Israeli soldier knows that he or she will merit the same courageous action should the worst occur. Every Israeli parent knows that his daughter or son will receive the same support from worldwide Jewry. At the risk of overstating the obvious, how can you compare an Israeli society that will give up nearly anything to free a living child to a Palestinian society that will sacrifice its children simply in order to kill other people's children? You know, there was a Canaanite god in biblical times called Molech, to whom the local inhabitants of what later became Israel offered up their living children for a horrible death, simply in order to placate that god. Molech, to the Israelites, was the ultimate abomination. And the famous story of the binding of Isaac in Genesis is an object lesson in the necessity not to sacrifice children to such an obscene ideal. Israel has once again demonstrated that every one of its children is precious, that every human life is precious, just as the Palestinians have demonstrated that they continue in their own way to worship Molech. Israel instead has once again demonstrated its commitment to this central value of human society. And most of all today, Gilad Shalit is a free man. To play us in this morning, here's a brand new Israeli song from pop icon Arik Einstein. The words were written by Guy Bocati. It celebrates the release of Gilad Shalit. It's called Achshav Shata Kan. Now that you are here.
Velo nishkach kvar le'olam et harega ha-matot kshe-shamanu she-nigmar ve'ata ba liyot karov chiyuk shel yeladim tmimim kavash et ha-panim צמרמורת ראשונה אחרי 5 שנים עכשיו כשאתה כאן קח את זה לאט אל תרוץ מהר תזכור תשכח תצחק תמיד תהיה גיבור מותר לך לבכות זה לא פשוט בכלל לסלוח לגורל אבל עכשיו כשאתה כאן אפשר כבר לאהוב אפשר כבר לחבק חזק אפשר לישום עמוק 5 שנים תקתק הלב תקתק שעון כאב פחד שכבר לא תחזור, הרג לנו את הלב.
That was the new song by Arik Einstein, the Israeli star, celebrating the release of Gilad Shalit. The words of that poem to Shalit are, and the words, by the way, are by Guy Bocati. And we will never forget the sweet moment that we heard it was over, that you are coming to be near. A smile of innocent children took over our faces, the first shudder after 5 years. Now that you are here, take it slow. Don't run fast. Remember, forget, laugh. You'll always be a hero. You are allowed to cry. It's not simple at all to forgive fate. But now that you are here, you can have love. You can have a strong embrace. You can breathe deep. For 5 years, the heart ticked, a clock, ticking pain. The fear that you would not return killed our hearts. We love to hear your name. Now you are back. And there is a great love here. Take what is possible. Don't dare to be shy. We have waited just to give you everything you ask for. But now that you are here, how wonderful it is that you are here. Celebrating the release of Gilad Shalit. Quite a week. You know, the Jewish commitment to the theater goes back to the Middle Ages, and there have been many fine playwrights for the legitimate stage in the U.S. James Sherman is the prolific and entertaining author of Beau Geste and lots of other outstanding plays, usually with Jewish elements and often with Jewish themes as well. Meet him when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Hurrah, Hey Novel, arise and sing. Jewish Music Comes Alive, a wonderful concert of outstanding Jewish music from the fabulous Tucson Chamber Artists is coming to Temple Emmanuel, Saturday night, October 29th at 7:30 p.m. This versatile ensemble of vocal and instrumental musicians will present a program that includes Leonard Bernstein's Chichester Psalms, Whitaker's Five Hebrew Psalms, and guest soloist Rabbi Sam Kohan. It'll be a magnificent night of Jewish contemporary classical music performed by the Tucson Chamber Artists' magnificent singers and instrumentalists. The TCA is dedicated to enriching lives through the transformational power of classical music. The Hurrah Hey Novel Concert, Jewish Music Comes Alive. That's Saturday night, October 29th, 7:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road. Call 327-4501 for tickets or visit the TCA website, TucsonChamberArtists.org. Arise, sing, and celebrate great Jewish music.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. You know, the great Italian philosopher Antonio Garaducci once said, "To find balance in life is to find happiness." Now, I assume he was a smart guy, being a philosopher and all. So it gets me to thinking, balance is probably a good thing when it comes to pizza, too. You know, just the right amount of sauce, cheese, crust, and toppings. But consider this, what one mama's customer might think is just the right amount of something, another customer might think is too much or too little. That's why at Mama's we balance every item we make to each individual customer's taste. Extra cheese or light cheese, heavy on the sauce or easy on the sauce, crispy crust or lightly done crust. It's all in balance for each customer. And as Garaducci says, balance equals happiness. And that equals loyal Mama's customers. So I'd say that, on balance, that's a pretty good situation. Mama's Pizza with four convenient locations. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza!
Tucson Hebrew Academy is now enrolling students for the fall. THA always knew they had the best kindergarten in town, and now it's official. Following the Outstanding Teacher Award presented by the Jewish Federation of Southern Arizona to THA's kindergarten teacher, Jackie Miller. Kindergarten through 8th grade curriculum centers on rigorous academics, infused with Jewish values and ethics, providing a well-rounded educational experience. While many schools have cut the all-important arts, physical education, and health classes, THA is integrating them into the curriculum in a safe, nurturing environment. We graduate capable, confident students poised for the next chapter in their lives, prepared to enter higher levels of school, and ready to contribute to the larger community. Tucson Hebrew Academy is an award-winning Blue Ribbon school. Last year, THA awarded over $700,000 in financial assistance to students and their families. Great education is more affordable than you think. The best education comes from THA. Space is limited, including in their kindergarten. Call 529-3888 today to register or arrange a private tour. That's 529-3888 or visit THAAZ.org.
We are delighted to welcome to Jewish our guest this morning, playwright James Sherman. He is a distinguished playwright from Chicago who writes, I would say, with spectacular regularity. His plays include Magic Time, The God of Isaac, Mr. 80%, The Escape Artist, This Old Man Came Rolling Home, perhaps most famously Beau Geste, which was made into a movie about a year ago. We'll talk about that later. Just a Second, and many others, Half and Half, Affluenza. Jim, you began your professional career writing and acting with Chicago's famous Second City troupe. What kind of training was that?
Well, they call Second City the Harvard of comedy. And not to specifically date myself, but when I was in the company at Second City, it was before Saturday Night Live. So, you know, most people come to Chicago and want to work at Second City because they think that's the stepping stone. And but when I was in high school, I used to go to the Second City and see John Belushi and Bill Murray, and that was my dream, was to get a chance to work there, and that dream came true. And I was right out of college and worked there for 3 years, and it was tremendous. I think one of the reasons why you've heard of so many people that got their start at Second City is because you have a unique relationship with the audience, because you are improvising every night and developing your own material every night. It gives you a relationship with the audience that gets developed, and it kind of was the beginning of me finding my own voices as an artist and as a writer. So it was very important as part of my training.
You know, I have to ask you this question. What kind of a job is playwright for a nice Jewish boy?
Well, the same job as Georges Kaufman and Neil Simon and Woody Allen.
A few of them did okay.
Yeah, Stephen Sondheim, you know, so yeah, we're doing okay, because I didn't go to med school or law school, so I went into theater and went into show business.
We will talk much more with James Sherman, the distinguished playwright from Chicago, and talk about Chicago as well when we come back on Too Jewish.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmakers Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson, and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes one and two bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org.
Please plan to join me on Sunday, November 6th, for a fantastic evening honoring Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, starting at 5:30 p.m. It will be a memorable night indeed. The Tucson Hebrew Academy is holding its 7th annual Tikkun Olam event. That's Sunday, November 6th, at 5:30 p.m. at the Jewish Community Center. Tikkun Olam means repair the world, and it's an important call to action for Jews everywhere in the world. Who better personifies this than Gabby Giffords? This wonderful evening will bring the entire community together to honor Congresswoman Giffords. She'll be joined by her friend and colleague, Congresswoman Shelley Berkeley from Nevada, with a very special MC, Dr. Richard Carmona, the 17th Surgeon General of the United States. Proceeds from the event go to benefit the Tucson Hebrew Academy's scholarship and affordability programs. It'll feature music, a silent and live auction, and great food. Tickets are on sale, and some sponsorship opportunities still remain. Call 520-529-3888 today for more information, or visit the website at thaaz.org. Let's join together in the spirit of Tikkun Olam, honoring Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords on Sunday, November 6th, and supporting Jewish education and scholarship. Call THA at 529-3888 or go to the website thaaz.org. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. I have to admit that I'm in an Israeli mood this week with the freeing of Gilad Shalit. Oh, and the beginning of the planning of a new temple pilgrimage trip to Israel set for June of 2012. By the way, if you're interested in going with me, you can email me at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 327-4501. That's 520-327-4501. Here's a beautiful song by Israeli singer Achinoam Nini, Noah, Niga El Hachalom, Touch the Dream. The lyrics are lovely, too, and reminiscent of Gilad Shalit. The edge of the dream, and that's it. The sand of time that fell between my fingers. It's over. It's finished. Maybe forever. A circle that closed, and you remained alive. We will meet. We'll see each other. A loving heart is not wrong. As to the sea, we will flow. We will ask until we arrive and touch the dream.
זה חלום ודי כל הזמן שנשאר ונצפה אותה זה עבר זה נגמר לתמיד
Israeli singer Ahinoam Nini singing the beautiful song Niga El HaChalom. That's Noah. Touch the dream. We welcome our special guest for these couple of weeks, Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Cohen. Also happens to be my dad. Good morning, Dad.
Good morning, Simcha.
We started talking last week. We were talking about Simcha Torah, about Torah portions. I asked you your favorite Torah portion. You said, oh, they're all my favorite. But you were lying, weren't you?
Well.
Okay.
Yes
I'll soften
no.
that. That's not the whole truth. There are certain portions which are maybe less favorite and some that are more interesting and more important.
That's true. I think we all could feel that way. For outstanding Torah portions, I suppose what Hanan is a very favorite of many of us.
The second in Deuteronomy.
Second portion in Deuteronomy, which quotes both the Shema and the Ten Commandments. That has to be an outstanding message. And it's part of course, of Moses' farewell to the people. But earlier in the Torah, you have passages like Kedoshim,
you shall be holy because I, Lord your God, am
yes,
holy.
And then how are we to be holy? Right. We treat each other right.
Love your neighbors, you love yourself. Also from the middle of the Torah, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's some other wonderful passages like the Shirat Hayam, the Song of Moses at the Red Sea. You know, outstanding piece of poetry and a watershed in more ways than one time in our history.
Now, it's funny because when we think about great Torah portions, it's rare that people will talk about Bereishit, Genesis, but certainly that has, reading it now for the beginning of the new Torah reading cycle, certainly that has to be one of the great sections of all human literature.
Yes, and probably one of the most discussed and the most controversial. It always impresses me the controversy between the creationists and the evolutionists that if you look at the sequence of events in the story of creation in Genesis, it's exactly the same as evolution. Life started in the water, then it comes on land, and it comes to vegetation, and it comes to animals, and finally to humans. Exactly the same. Periods of time, of course, are different, because before the flood, who knows how long a day was or a year was?
Yeah, how long is a day to God?
Exactly. It said, Vayera vayivoka yom echad. It was evening, it was morning, one day. But there was no sun, there was no sunrise or sunset. They hadn't been invented yet, hadn't been created. So how long was a day? Could be eons.
So one last question. In addition to favorite or most important Torah portions, there have to be some least favorite Torah portions.
Oh, yes. There's one pair that we often referred to, Tazria and Metzora, the laws of leprosy, which I think most of us could do without, even though they're critical for people's health, but not something we particularly treat as sacred material.
Not what you want for your bar mitzvah.
Not hardly.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you.
We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Israel Center. Boker Tov, Guy. Good morning.
Boker Tov, Rabbi. How are you today?
Doing well. All the holidays are finally behind us.
Oh, great.
I mean, they're wonderful, but, you know, it's like a month, 5 weeks before you're finally done. So we can think about other ways in which Israel is presented to the United States. One of the really great things that Israel has to offer is such a fantastic culture. Let's talk a little bit about what the Israel Center does to promote it.
Yeah, one of our major programs to bring Israel culture here to Tucson is the Heartbeat of Israel. It's a year-long program that brings concerts, lectures, kids' activities, a lot of family fun programs to bring the Israeli culture, the Israeli knowledge, if you'd like, to the people here in Tucson. You know, upcoming, we have this concert of Uri Banai on October 30th. Later on along the year, we're planning to have a Tu Bishvat party and a Chanukah party. We're also having a concert with Noah and Mira Awad, an Israeli and a Palestinian singer singing together. Together with Temple Emmanuel, we're planning to have the Mimuna celebration at the end of Passover. A lot of fun, but also some connection to roots. Because, you know, many times here, American Jews mainly focus on their engagement with Israel only on the political aspect. And they forget that the real connection we have with Israel is by far deeper. It has nothing to do with the Israeli-Arab conflict. It has to do with being Jewish, with having a Jewish identity, knowing our homeland, knowing the culture of this homeland. Also, one needs to remember that today in the world, we have two major Jewish communities, one here in the United States and the other is in Israel. So when talking about Kol Yisrael Arevim Ze Laze, all of Israel are responsible for each other, we should start by knowing each other, you know, knowing the culture. So coming to see those concerts with your family and having this family fun, it's a great way to endorse this culture and to know this culture and to kind of give the torch to the next generation, to educate them. And I think it's very important. It's very important for Jewish continuity, for our family traditions, for maintaining the Jewish people.
You know, it's fascinating. I think American Jews think they know Israel often. And if they listen to the Two Jewish Radio Show, of course, then they do. But so many times we assume it's sort of some American version just happens to be stuck in the Middle East of Judaism. And the Jewish part may be similar, but the actual culture is diverse and rich and warm and different from what we're used to here.
Yeah, there are a lot of differences. And the Israel Heartbeat, the Heartbeat of Israel program is a great opportunity to get your family to know those. We're now offering unique family passes that actually allows you to give your family $617 of value through tickets to concerts while paying only $180. So that we really intend to try and get families with young kids to be involved. And we work very hard with a lot of partners, including Temple Emmanuel and the Judaic Studies at the university and other partners across Tucson to make this affordable for any family.
That's great. The best place to find out about it is at the website.
You can come to the website at jewishtucson.org. You can also connect my Facebook site at Tucson Shaliach Guy Gelbart. You can friend me. I'm friending anyone who wants to be friend with me and get all the information. And you can send me an email at ggelbart@jfsa.org. Thank you.
Thanks, Guy. We'll talk next week. When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the outstanding restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant and J Bar in Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, I've got a new take on J Bar. We like to go there, actually love to go there, after Friday night services.
Rabbi, I'm staffing extra heavy for you. So come in after services, come out on the patio. It's beautiful out there right now. Have a margarita, have some great dinner. after services on Friday, any night of the week.
So every night except Sunday. My wife loves the fish tacos. I love the chilaquiles, but you also have specials on a regular basis.
Every night we have specials at J-Bar, and all of the food expresses the flavors from this region. It's the beautiful, wonderful, exciting flavors of the Southwest. It's the flavor of where we live.
How can people make a reservation?
Just give me a call at 615-6100. Go to my website, Janos.com, make a reservation, and we'll be waiting to see you Friday night, any night.
Sounds great. Janos.com.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Want to know what's really going on in the relationship between Israel and America? Find out Wednesday, November 9th from 1 to 9 p.m. at the University of Arizona's Student Union Memorial Center, the South Ballroom, as the Arizona Center for Judaic Studies invites the community to its symposium on the U.S.-Israel relationship on the verge of a paradigmatic shift. Internationally renowned scholars and diplomats will discuss these critically important issues. The symposium speakers include Peter Beinart, Itamar Rabinovich, Steve Spiegel, Alon Pincus, David Makovsky, and Gil Ryback. They'll all discuss the key question of whether the U.S. is on the verge of a dramatic change in its relationship with Israel, or whether it's simply going through a phase like it has gone through before. The symposium is for everyone, students and scholars, policymakers, and the general public. It's open to all. To register, contact the Arizona Center for Judaic Studies. Call 520-626-5758. That's 626-5758. Or contact Judaic Studies on the web through their website, Judaic, J-U-D-A-I-C dot Arizona dot E-D-U. Call 626-5758 for tickets. General admission is $18 a person. Sponsorships are available. Admission is free with a valid U of A CAT card or $18 without. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking last week about Jewish libraries and their provenance and began, just scratched the beginnings of the surface of talking about the famous Cairo Geniza. You mentioned a recent book called Sacred Trash. Let's give a little background on the Cairo Geniza, shall we?
Right. Well, Geniza comes from a very ancient word, which has distant relatives both in Arabic and in Persian, which seems to mean hiding place or cache, which literally comes from the French for cachet, which is to hide. And it seems that the Jews of one synagogue in Cairo, one out of many, and by far not the oldest synagogue in Cairo.
It's the Ben Ezra synagogue, right?
Yeah. Had a room kind of hidden in the attic behind the wall of the women's section, which was upstairs, blah, 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 where they kind of dumped old manuscripts, but not only old prayer books and chumashim and sort of sacred texts, also family letters, accounts, in other words,
bills of sale, contracts, all kinds of stuff.
Exactly. In other words, the written word was so important to medieval Jews, and many of these pieces of paper and fragments of paper date back to the 9th, 10th, 11th centuries, that they made no distinction between the written word of what we regard as sacred books and the written word of a family traveler, a contract, a bill of sale, a promissory note, et cetera, et cetera. Now, of course, had we been talking about Western Europe in the Middle Ages, we would be talking about things that were only in monasteries and all written by scribes, because most people could neither read nor write. One of the things that the Cairo Geniza tells us about Jews living in Cairo in the 10th, 11th, 12th century, etc., is that there was a very high degree of literacy, that they wrote to each other, they could read these things. And yet they still had such reverence for the sacred word that all these things were buried in a special room in the synagogue. And of course, At one point late in the 19th century, as so often happens with our synagogues today, you know, the center of the Jewish community had moved from one neighborhood to another. It was finally decided that the synagogue had to be relocated and rebuilt. The old one was torn down. The new one went up. They had to move the Geniza. And in the process of preparing this move, and even more so in the process of doing this move, little bits and pieces of the Geniza, this huge treasure of literary fragments, floated out by unscrupulous synagogue employees, board members, whatever, janitors, you know, who knows, and made their way into the world antiquities market, presumably first through antiquities dealers in Cairo, and then nearby places like Jerusalem, Damascus, Constantinople, whatever. And people began to get clues, sort of in the 1870s and 1880s, that there was something big there. You know, it was like the bibliophiles and Judaica scholars had Geiger counters, which increasingly focused on Cairo and on this one synagogue in particular. And that begins an actually amazingly exciting tale, which we can go into next week.
I love cliffhangers. We will continue on the Cairo Geniza next week. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Leah's been married for about 2 months when she has her first big fight with her husband. Immediately afterward, she goes to see the rabbi. "Hello, Leah. Nice to see you again," says Rabbi Levi. "It seems only yesterday I married you and Arnold under the chuppah. How are you guys getting on?" "Well, that's why I'm here, Rabbi," she replies, starting to cry. "Arnold and I have just had an awful fight. Just awful." "Oh, don't cry," says Rabbi Levi. "That often happens soon after a marriage. Calm down. I think every marriage has to have its first fight sometime." "I know that, Rabbi," says Leah, "but where am I going to hide Arnold's body?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature to Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and survive. Having completed the creation of the world in yesterday's Torah reading of Genesis, Bereishit, this coming week in Temple we'll read the great Torah portion of Noah about the most famous mariner of all, a man who rode out the storm to end all storms in an ark. From a forgotten Broadway show on the theme of Noah called 2x2, starring the late Danny Kaye, it's all about what happens when you finally get off the ark, a delightful song called When It Dries.
We're going to walk a righteous path when it dries, when it dries. Remembering how he vents his wrath when it dries. We're going to walk a righteous path, remembering how he vents his wrath.
That when he got mad, we took some bath.
When it
In any case, the great tale of Noah is shared to one degree or another by other ancient books of lore and legend, most notably the famous Sumerian epic of Gilgamesh, another guy who had to build a big boat to save humanity. But rather than read to you an ancient Akkadian, although I know you would prefer that, I kind of thought Bill Cosby's version of the Noah story would work better on radio.
You see, Noah was in his rec room sawing away. He was making a few things for the home there. He's a good carpenter.
Vuba, vuba, vuba.
Noah. Who is that?
It's the Lord, Noah.
Right. Where are you? What do you want? I've been good.
I want you to build an ark.
Right. What's an ark?
Get some wood, build it, 300 cubits by 80 cubits by 40 cubits.
Right. What's a cubit?
Well, don't worry about that, Noah. When you get that done, go out into the world, collect all of the animals in the world by twos, male and female, and put them into the ark.
Right. What's going on?
I'm going to destroy the world.
Right. Am I on candid camera?
Bill Cosby on Noah. There's something inherently comic about being stuck on a big boat with a lot of animals. And yet, like Noah, we all must try to perfect this challenging and often broken world, whether we do it with an ark or in much smaller ways, with mitzvot and acts of tzedakah, ethical actions, and charity. When we come back on Too Jewish, our guest, playwright James Sherman, will tell us what makes a play funny and Jewish when we return on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114. We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The news this week was overwhelmed with the Gilad Shalit release story, and rightly so, and the release of the 1,027 Palestinian terrorists in exchange. Of note is the reaction in Gaza and the West Bank when the Palestinian prisoners returned home. In contrast to the joyous reunion that Shalit experienced in Israel, there were vows by Hamas and other Palestinian terror groups to take more Israeli soldiers prisoner, dire threats to slaughter more Jews, and this from Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority of Fatah in the West Bank, to continue the struggle until we have a Palestinian state with Jerusalem as its capital. Not exactly peace partners extraordinaire, are they? In other news, a group of European rabbis has called on the Pope to condemn the latest anti-Semitic ravings by a Holocaust-denying Catholic bishop. The Brussels-based Conference of European Rabbis slammed Catholic Bishop Richard Williamson for the comments in which he blamed Jews for deicide, that is, killing Jesus. Williamson, a member of the radical Catholic Pious Brotherhood sect, made the comments in the latest issue of his own newsletter, The Liaison Comments. He lives in London. Comments like these take us back decades to the dark days before there was a meaningful and mutually respectful dialogue between Jews and Roman Catholics, Conference President Chief Rabbi Pinchas Goldschmidt of Moscow said. Goldschmidt called for the church to suspend negotiations with extremist Catholic tendencies until it's clear that these groups show a clear commitment to tackling anti-Semitism within their own ranks. In his newsletter, Williamson wrote that only the Jews were the primary agents of the deicide because Pontius Pilate would never have condemned Jesus if the Jews had not asked for his blood. Williamson was found guilty of Holocaust denial in Germany in 2010 and fined about $14,000. He has previously denied the existence of gas chambers and the murder of 6 million Jews during the Holocaust. In 2009, if you remember, Pope Benedict XVI lifted the excommunication against Williamson, but the Vatican also reportedly declared that in order to be admitted to episcopal functions within the church, he will have to take his distance in an absolutely unequivocal and public fashion from his position on the Shoah, which the Holy Father was not aware of when the excommunication was lifted. On the other hand, he left it lifted, if you will. During meetings with the Pope in Berlin last month, German Jewish leader Dieter Graumann said that one of the issues that troubled Jewish-Catholic relations was the Church's refusal to condemn Williamson. In his statement, Goldschmidt said the Pope has shown a commitment to fostering a spirit of positive dialogue with Jews both before and during his papacy, but he must clearly show that there is no room in the Catholic Church for purveyors of hate. And as it turns out, while I wondered about this last week, there were indeed sukkahs in the Occupy Wall Street protest demonstrations, at least in New York, and somebody was selling lulavs and etrogs. In other words, somebody made money selling Sukkot stuff to the people protesting the capitalist system. What a country. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, playwright James Sherman. His plays include Beau Jest and, oh, many others. He explores issues that are not specifically Jewish, but certainly include lots of Jewish references and sometimes are very specifically Jewish, particularly the interplay of the generations. He had his training at Second City, in which we spoke about earlier this morning, the famous Second City troupe, which he called the Harvard of Comedy, and is the resident playwright at Victory Gardens Theater. He's received a number of grants and fellowships and awards. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about how your Jewish background influences your playwriting.
It's just a part of who I am. And, you know, when I get an idea for a story, you know, if I'm going to write a play about my mother, that mother is going to be Jewish. When Tennessee Williams wrote a play about his mother and he called it Glass Menagerie, those characters were from the South, like Tennessee Williams. And Edward Albee wrote a play about his mother called Three Tall Women, and those characters were from New England, like Edward Albee is. So, we're all really writing plays about our mothers. We just do it from our own background.
So many of your plays seem to feature the interplay of generations, not just door to door, which is obviously a play on the Hebrew Lador Vador from generation to generation, but all so many of them seem to have that kind of intergenerational thing going on. Is that intentional?
Well, it is. I think the first one that really addressed that was, well, The God of Isaac, I guess, was the first one. But when it came to Beau Jest, I had a playwriting professor in college who said, you know, every playwright writes a play to get back at his parents. And I thought, you know, I love my parents. And I had this really wonderful middle-class upbringing in the suburbs of Chicago. So I wanted to write a play in which the parents are the heroes. And that was a big part of the inspiration for Beau Jest. We all deal with our relationships with our parents as we grow up. But I wanted to write a play in which it was clear that it wasn't just all their fault. So that is kind of a recurring theme in my work. Yeah.
This is sort of an angle on this, but it seems to me that theater is the most, I don't know, it's the scariest of media. It's the most live, you know. Obviously it's live theater, it's legitimate theater. And if it's not a musical, you can't even sort of escape into tunes somewhere along the way, in which there's just sort of a performance going on. It's such a dynamic experience. It can be great. It can be terrible. It can be anything in between. And you don't really know until, you know, the curtain goes up. How do you feel when your plays are sort of out there. Now, you've been doing this a long time. You've had a lot of success. But how does it feel when you kind of let your child go like that?
Well, it is precisely that. You know, they go out off into the world, and all you can do is hope for the best. And occasionally I do get invited to see a production of a play of mine. Of course, in the original productions of a play, I'll be very involved with the casting and the development of the play, and I do a lot of rewriting and rehearsal, and because I have a background as an actor, I understand their process, and so it's very much of a collaboration, and I love that part of the work. That's really my favorite part. But then when the play is published and it goes out into the world, one never knows what's going to happen. And sometimes, like it happened when I was in Tucson recently and saw this lovely production of Half and Half, I can show up and be delighted. That's not always the case, but that is the nature of the business.
Which playwright influenced you the most in your development?
You know, the obvious ones, of course, certainly Neil Simon, Georges Kaufman. But I'm also a great fan of an English playwright named Alan Ayckbourn, mm-hmm. has been a big inspiration for me, Tom Stoppard. But I'm also adjunct faculty and teach theater classes and playwriting classes at a couple of colleges in Chicago. And I also, think that Sophocles was really important. And call me old-fashioned, but I still believe that the kinds of things that he did in developing a play are still what makes a good play.
You know, I think about Chicago, second city, maybe third city in population these days, and yet it has produced such a remarkable art scene, David Mamet, yourself, so many others. Is there something special about Chicago?
Well, I think there is. The second city was the birthplace of improvisational theater, and of course, so many of us now, of course, so many young people come to Chicago. One of the schools where I'm an adjunct faculty is Columbia College of Chicago, and they're actually developing what's going to be the first of its kind in the country, a degree program in comedy studies. So, because so many people do come to Chicago just with the dream of working at Second City and getting their own TV show or Saturday Night Live or whatever. So there's that, and there's also, whatever you heard about Chicago in terms of Stacker of Wheat and this kind of Midwest work ethic. We do still, even in this economy, have a thriving theater scene. We get tremendous support from the community, from our audiences. Every year they have the Tony Awards in New York, and each that are strictly for Broadway, but each year the Tony Committee gives a Tony Award to a regional theater, and Chicago is the one city that has had multiple winners of the Regional Theater Tony Award. I think we're up to four now. We certainly have the record. Maybe it's five. So it's a thriving arts community, and of course we also have things like the Chicago Symphony Orchestra and the Art Institute of Chicago. So this is where I was born. This has always been home, and I love it here.
I want to thank Jim Sherman for a great visit on Too Jewish. You can find out more about him at his website, jamessherman.com. Wonderful place. Keep writing.
Okay. Thank you, Rabbi. It's a pleasure talking with you.
You too. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Peter Beinart, the journalist and professor whose article, The Failure of the American Jewish Establishment, created a firestorm of comment this year. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or on our TooJewishRadio.com website. And please, friend us on Facebook. Everybody needs friends. Our playout this morning comes from the Israeli Moshav Band, and it's called Breishit, for the beginning of the Torah that we started reading in Temple yesterday. And of course, it's also the beginning of a new life for Gilad Shalit. My friends, may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Bereshit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim, et ha-shamayim ve-et ha-aretz. Bereshit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim, et ha-shamayim ve-et ha-aretz. Ve-aretz hayta tohu וחושך על פני תהום, ורוח אלוהים מרחבת.